Welcome back to the Ministry Without Hating It podcast, a ministry of Odyssey Haven Coaching and Counseling dedicated to the pursuit of answering the question, is it possible to do ministry without hating it? We have a theory that it just might be. I am Chad Garrison. I'm here with my friend, my partner, Brenton Hill. Brenton, how are we doing today?
We are doing well. I'm awake and alive and ready to record.
Wow, that's your best yet. I'm not going to lie to you.
Yeah.
When I throw it over to you, you definitely follow it right back. So I've always appreciated that about you. Mm-hmm. Hey, Brenton, before we jump into today's episode, I do want to just bring awareness to our new website, the ministrywithouthatingit.com. Before I'd forwarded to another one, it was like a forwarding thing. Now we've got our own site. There you can find all the episodes. You can subscribe. You can find ways to get on our email monthly mailing list. And
you can buy Chad a coffee.
You can buy us a coffee, dog. That's right. Support the Ministry Without Hating It podcast. Podcasts, well, if you want to just do them right, they cost a little bit of money. And so we would love any support you can throw our way. It's simple and easy to do. And that will go towards helping build out this ministry to other ministry leaders. And so any support you can give us, we'd love that. And also you can connect with us anytime through our socials just by visiting linktree.com/withouthatingit and connect with us. So today's episode, we sit down for a conversation with our friend, Pastor Esperanza, or Espy, as we call her, Morphis. Great conversation, Brenton.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, she got vulnerable with us real quick on some of just the ebbs and flows of ministry for her, the changes and transitions of roles, and where even maybe some of those roles came to an unhealthy space in her and what God was doing, but how he's also just been able to just illuminate a new thing in the same space, as you'll hear her unpack here in just a minute. But we're really excited for you to hear this episode. Is there anything else you'd want to add to that?
She teaches us how to stay in our lanes.
Yeah, she really does. Yeah. Just some really great practical stuff. We're really excited for you to hear this conversation. SB currently serves as an assistant supervisor to the Central District of the Foursquare churches, and previous to that served on some district teams, then also served as a pastor and in many other capacities within the local church. We are excited for you to hear and enjoy our conversation with Esperanza Morphis. Well, it's wonderful to welcome Esperanza Morphis, or Espy, as we know her, to the Ministry Without Hating It podcast. And Espy, we have started this thing with this season called the kickoff questionnaire, and they're just simply questions that have nothing to do with ministry but need to be asked anyway. So we've got those for you. Are you ready?
Yes, I'm ready. All right, go for it.
Let's do all right, your first one here then. Coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Coffee. Okay. So tell us why you favor coffee over tea.
Well, coffee I only drink when I'm sick. So okay. I associate drinking tea because I'm not feeling well and I don't like to not feel well. So I will pivot over to coffee any day.
Okay. So then side question with that, where do you consider the best coffee to be from?
Ooh, I might get some haters after this, but my honest opinion, McDonald's.
McDonald's.
I love McDonald's. It's robust. It's strong. Wow. I don't like Starbucks. I will drink Starbucks. I'll get a chai tea. That's probably the tea I drink. Okay. Starbucks to me is too bitter.
Like
it.
I would say that it might be a Midwest thing.
Okay.
Because here in Indiana, when we ask that same question, the people in our congregation often say, oh, it's McDonald's by far the best coffee. And
okay.
I'm like, all right. I don't know.
I don't know. Here's my little pushback, and not to get on a side note okay. with this already. But I am married to as a self-professed coffee snob. Like, she doesn't even let me make it anymore because it's not right and to her liking. And her go-to is not McDonald's. So I don't know if it's a Midwest thing. She's born and raised a Hoosier. But that's okay. I legitimately was not expecting that. I was expecting some like third wave coffee shop, and that's okay, Espy. That's great. Yeah. That's
we've been able to pay our house off because we drink McDonald's. Yes.
There you go.
And that is how you do life without hating it. Right there. There you go.
There you go.
All right. Second question. What is your most used emoji?
The hands. The hands up. Two hands.
Oh, the praise hands.
My thing is, it's universally saying, "Praise God." It's a universal, like, "All right." A universal way of saying, "I'm with you," and "You go, girl." I'm, you know, "You go, boy." Yeah.
Okay. Love it. Very good. All right. Third question: what are you reading and/or listening to right now?
Well, I am reading. Renovations of the Heart. Just really been reading this. I mean, I'm reading the Leadership Issues Found in the Bible by John Maxwell. Okay. So the ministry side, I'm reading that just to kind of sharpen my blade. But I always try to read a devotional along with my Bible reading, just to really get into the crevices of my heart that nobody can see but my family and me.
Hmm.
So I always
Go ahead.
Yeah, I always try to read something that just really refines and makes me aware of where I am at personally with God. Something that we have a lot of little statements in our home, but one of them, I'll give you two. Number one, ministry starts at home. So I believe if we're going to shine anywhere, we have to shine at home. And that's why I do the personal devotion. And then number two is our family's desire is never, ever be a public success and a private failure.
Oh, nice.
So I always try to bleed those two together. And, you know, if it's working at home, if someone asks me to come and speak, it'll work where I go. Hmm.
Oh, excellent. We're not even into this has happened before. We're not even into the actual like interview and you're already dropping it on us. So I love it. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
You're
so
welcome.
If you had 24 hours a day, said 24,
25.
25, excuse me, 25. Thank you, Brenton. How would you spend your extra time?
With my family.
Okay.
Yeah.
Anything in specific or?
Well, we have grandchildren. We've got two boys. We've got a third little grandbaby boy on the way. So they're very busy. I would do it with family. If it wasn't with the grandkids, it would be with my sisters. If it wasn't with my sisters, it would be with my husband and my daughter. It would be somewhere centered around family.
Okay. So I'm already beginning to see the theme of what motivates and drives you, and maybe even from a ministry standpoint. We'll get to that in just a minute. So last one then, what do you find exciting for you in life right now?
I would say being a grandmother. Personally, being a grandmother, to have my little grandbaby boys come over and they look just like my son, just like my daughter-in-law. It is a feeling I can't even explain it. Ministry-wise, I would say the fact that God didn't forget me when the Heartland District shut down.
Okay.
I mean, honestly.
Well, and let's give, so for those that maybe aren't aware of what that even means, you'll have a little context, because I do, because I was a part of the Heartland district. That was the way a former district, the way that our Foursquare denomination had the country sectioned off and being able to minister to the pastors of those regions and churches. And you served, what was your role within that district?
I served in missions. Okay. In the historic Heartland, I served in the missions aspect of the district, just kind of networking. I felt like that was another thing too. I think one of the things that I realized, and this is kind of a theme, whether you're in the context of a local church or the national church, you really have to know your lane. Because if you don't know your lane, the more you know your lane, the more you'll know the expression of ministry that God is wanting you to express. If you get another DMR, back then it was called district missions rep, you could have a district like Peter Henderson. I mean, this guy could go into a nation with unreached people groups and start a whole movement. Then you have another DMR, which I won't name drop. You have another DMR who will raise up 15 full-time missionaries. And then there's Esperanza Morphis. I felt like I was more of a networker, connector. I was more of a coach as far as missions. So if I didn't understand that, I would have left that DMR role looking like I failed. But I don't think I did. I think that my part complimented in just really highlighted the missions aspect of the national church. I'm not sure if that's what you were looking for, but I just felt led to say that.
Yeah, no, that I think that's really good. And I think it actually speaks to even where we would transition next and speaking specifically about ministry. But just for maybe just to kind of close the circle on that. So Foursquare, about a year and a half ago, would you say, did a realignment of the districts. And so what was the historic, it literally was historic Heartland was something else before, but kept the same, has expanded in territory. And so those teams were either absorbed or came together, and some people transitioned and moved on. But just go ahead and tell then how that affected you, and then what transpired for you after that you're saying that you're excited for now.
Okay. Well, when the historic Heartland shut down, that was very sad. I felt sad for a group of people because we spent a lot of years working with six states, bringing it to a place of not networking, but to a place of community. And then leadership did a reorganization. And it was part of my heart was like, oh my gosh, we lost the community. And so that was very sad for me. And I saw even with myself, many leaders have to leave a position. And now what? Now what do I do? And then also at the same time, God really spoke to me and really encouraged me to never, ever, ever, never use a position to express identity. And I know that. I knew that. But, man, it was like right to the gut. And I said, I had to really, I was like, God, I am so sorry. I did not know that had become, I'm going to use the word idol. I don't know how drastic that may sound. Yeah. It was like it became an idol. So I felt when the historic district shut down, I just went into, I felt like I went into a wilderness. And it wasn't a bad wilderness. It was a wilderness just really seeing me for who I am. And it was a very humbling place to be. So I felt I got to a place where, you know what? It's in Song of Solomon. I don't know the exact scripture, but it says, who is this coming out of the wilderness leaning on my beloved? Hmm. And I felt like that was me. I felt like I was me coming out of the wilderness. I had dirt on my face. I had smoke coming off my clothes. but I was coming out and it was just me and God. And I felt like right when I got to that place, I got a phone call asking would I come to the table of the new reorganization. And I did not like say, oh, yeah. I didn't. I stepped back and I said, God, can my character handle this?
Oh,
can I get into another position where I will not allow it to become an idol? And the Lord said, yes, if you walk with me. Mm-hmm. So I shared that with my husband and we prayed. And then sure enough, we went back and it was a definite yes. And then that year was wonderful. I felt like I felt like the DMR, the Dish and Missions rep strands broke off me, and I was really able to build because I felt like the missions position was good. It was good. I felt it let me grow and learn and learn people and know people. But I felt like I was stifled in the sense of just being internationally driven. I want to build the local church. I really believe that the kingdom of God advances through the context of the local church, whether it's a house church, church plant, a brick and mortar church, a coffee shop church, whatever. That is how God is going to extend the kingdom. And I want to be so part of that because that's really my heart. So I felt with the regional pastoral role, that was beauty personified. I loved every minute of it. And then at the end of 2022, Antonio invited me yet to another table, and that was to the associate supervisor role. And I was like, absolutely. I even like when he asked me, in my heart, I was like, yeah, I was doing those emoji hands. Like, yeah. But I said, let me talk to my husband about it. Let us pray about it and I'll get back to you. He said, absolutely. And when I told my husband just laughed and he goes, Espy, what did you say? I go, I didn't. I wanted to talk to you. And he goes, well, you know the answer because I do. And I said, yeah, I do. And so we did the political, we were politically correct and we waited the weekend. And then I went to Antonio and I said, Antonio, it is an absolute yes from both my husband and I. So here we are in this position now.
I want to say thank you for being just candid about even just the journey in that and even acknowledging where your heart was with the role in ministry, and especially in the second we asked you to even define what that looks like for you. But I also too just really love, and I feel like I talk to a lot of people in ministry, and each new season that God brings us in, as far as even walking in obedience, there's just this level of surprise that seems to just be like, I never would have thought. Right. It sounds like you would even say even 2 years ago, you never would have thought you'd be where you're at right now. No. But it's like, you know, put your praise hand emojis up.
Yeah.
For the roller coaster ride, you know.
And if I can preface Pastor Chad, what you just said. And now I'm thinking I just started this role, but just because I'm a planner, I'm already asking God. Because this is, a 4-year, it was a 5-year term, but I already missed a year because, you know, I came in, you know, a year and a half later. I'm already asking God, what do I need to complete in these 4 years? Because I don't know if there will be a 5th year. Because, you know, it's Foursquare. Come on, you know. So,
That needs to stay in.
Yeah. I mean, that's not a bad thing to say, but I want to be realistic. Sure. You know, I want to be realistic. Yeah. I don't want to be just, you know, assuming. So I'm really going hard after God right now. And I'm asking him, what is my assignment in these 4 years? I know what the job description is to Antonio and to the district team. But I really believe beyond that, there's something I'm supposed to do. Yeah. And I just, that has really been the cry of my heart. God, I want to do what if you've given me this type of, I'm going to call it a platform. I don't know what other way to put it, but I just want to do what I'm called to do in these 4 years.
Yeah. one of the ways that we've been talking about it around here recently is just what does obedience look like in this season?
Yeah. It's that it's that open-handed posture, you know, and I love what you said, because I think it's, you know, we can make jokes about our movements, and you know, I'm born and raised, grew up Foursquare, so I understand, I just know the ebbs and flows, but that's also ministry, period. You know what I mean? You know, we've talked, you know, frequently, even on this podcast, how we can plan one thing and tomorrow it will all change. Because that's ministry, right? Mm-hmm. That's life. Yeah.
Yeah.
I appreciate your heart with that. I just want to say thank you again for sharing.
Oh, you bet. You bet.
Interview is not over yet, so don't back off. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I love what you said earlier. You said, you know your lane, specifically when it's the season or even the assignment that you're in. So I'm curious then, and it's a question that we ask and have asked everybody, and if you want to answer it, maybe even in light of the know your lane mentality, what does the word today, what does the word ministry mean to you?
Wow. That's a loaded question. Well,
always.
Yes.
Always loaded.
Well, ministry really is, and we're going to, of course, put it in the Christian context, you know, ministry really is pointed and directed to the people God has called you to, but it's like twofold. You have that discipleship piece where you're moving them in to the love of God. You're moving them into the knowledge of who Jesus is, as Jeremiah says, that we're to grow in the knowledge of Jesus, to grow in the knowledge of God. So ministry is spurring another person or group on in that place of knowledge and love. But at the same time, we don't stop at the salvation. We stop in, we go deeper into what we're going to call the call of God for that person. So the prong, it's like a road, but it's not going one left or right. It's going in two directions. We have the discipleship piece where it's so intimate and personal with the Lord, but we've then, I'm going to call that the salvation piece. But then on the other side is the call of God piece, because we can't just do ministry where we lead people to the Lord and then we neglect the call of God that's on their life, where we actually steer them into, if they're a teacher, if they're a pastor, if they're a children's worker, you know, if they're a call to lead a management team at Best Buy, whatever it is, we're not stopping with the salvation. We're leading. Ministry is releasing that salvation piece and bringing definition, identity to it, but then also equipping them to do the work of the ministry, whatever that looks like to them individually. So I would say ministry is both. I don't think you should separate the both. I know ministry is like, oh, we're going to serve. We're going to serve. Yeah. Yeah. You can do that. And that's good. Yes. You could serve Jesus and serve a relationship, but please don't miss what the call of God is for that person, because then I don't think we do the church justice. Mm-hmm. I don't think we're building the church. That's like they'll get saved and we'll see them for 3 weeks and we don't see them anymore. Mm-hmm. They're looking for purpose. I think about Esther. When Esther, you know, Mordecai was grooming her and coaching her, and she got afraid. She's like, well, I don't know. I mean, the king didn't even invite me. You don't just show up to the king. You know, but then Mordecai, he propositioned her with this statement. He said, how do you know you didn't come into the kingdom for such a time as this? And I think when we bring people into the church and we just let them know that God loves them and they can return that love, I don't think we're presenting that statement. How do you know you've not come into the kingdom for such a time as this? In other words, we're called into the generation that needs us the most.
Yeah.
That's really what Mordecai was saying. Mordecai was saying, listen, how do you know you've not been called into the generation that needs you? You've not been called into the kingdom for such this time. So this whole ministry thing, there's such a deep place to it, you know, and all to, kudos to the churches who love Jesus. But I feel that we need churches that love Jesus and also understand calls of God.
Yes, 100%. I'm pausing because my brain's going in a couple different directions what you said, because you're right. It's so rich. I'm curious if there's any parts of your journey, and even just what the little bit you've shared, and what now you're able to see from the different, even the leading leaders vantage point that you have. What part of your journey, whether it's before or even more recent, has shaped the definition that you have just given us?
Well, I would say my local church, Cornerstone Christian Center, Chicago Heights, Foursquare Church. We're a Foursquare church. I love Foursquare. It's because of Foursquare, I am been developed and shaped in who I am. Our Foursquare church, is not a pastoral model. We have, our senior leader, Pastor Greg House, tremendous leader. I mean, this guy he's a spiritual father. I've had the honor to sit under his direction, his guidance, his fatherhood, his parenting, his pastoring, but also his prophetic voice. And Pastor Greg has always seen that fivefold model in Ephesians, the apostle, pastor, evangelist, pastor, teacher. So our church has always been driven by that 5-point model. So I'm not a product of just a pastor looking at me and grooming me with just that pastoral piece. Pastor Greg has groomed me with the prophetic and apostolic piece too, where God is not a monument, he's a movement, where God can speak today and it doesn't have to be weird.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of Foursquare churches, they like, because it's been too weird and it's been too harmful and it's hurt too many people. But if you can raise up a company of people who can identify the true prophetic and at the same time make it accountable, I think it can be really healthy. And that's the house I've come from.
So the word it keeps coming, you've already used it once that I love, that really sounds like it fits, is equipping. It's equipping.
So you know, the motto of our church is equipping people to lead.
Really?
That's the motto of our church. We equip people to lead. So that means we equip leaders to lead, but we also equip a mother to lead in the home, a father to lead in the home. We equip the manager to lead IBM. We equip the nurse to lead on the cardiac unit floor. Because, you know, we're all called to be leaders on different levels and capacities. So, yeah.
I love that. I love it. Mm-hmm. That's good. So I think I might know this just based on what you said, but then how would you, and this has been kind of more of a recent question, I'm just really curious how ministry leaders view this, but how would you define then success in ministry?
I'm going to go Bible. John says that it's, he's that Jesus is the vine. We are the branches and we're called to bear fruit. So in other words, I'm going to put it in my term, is if you abide with Jesus, he'll teach us how to bear fruit. Yeah. So to me, success is being fruitful and having fruit that remains. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to use the context of that vine, if you think about a vine, fruitfulness is also you have enough character to sit there when God prunes the vine.
Oh, pull that out for us. That's really deep. But go ahead, pull it out.
Because when you have leaders, like you look at the historic Heartland, because we can all identify with that. If we had the historic Heartland and we feel like we were successful, and then some leaders, group of leaders come and choose to remove it, we could have easily said, I'm done. Yeah. Forget it. I'm out of here. These people are crazy. And I'm going to go build something else again. And then they're going to turn around in 5 years and redo it again. Forget it. Character keeps you. Character invites you to the room, but maturity keeps you in the room. And I feel that when Jesus comes in and he prunes like he did with the Heartland District, he said, okay, National Church, I'm going to do a little bit of pruning, but I'm going to prune because when God prunes, it's only so we can bear more fruit. That's naturally, you prune a tree so it can bear more fruit. Well, God does the same thing. So your question was, what does fruitfulness and productivity?
Yeah.
It really is to bear fruit that remains, but to also sit there when God is pruning you, when he does cut a position away, when he does have the most biggest giver of the church leave your church, when he does have maybe your most strongest leader in the house leave, you're unbothered outwardly, inwardly, you could be screaming.
Yeah.
But you still don't move.
So, all right, I'm just going to go full on confession here. All right. Cause you're convicting me. and we'll leave the four square stuff out of it. Cause I've got my, Jesus has been dealing with my heart in a long way. Okay. I am curious for you just, and maybe if you could pass along, cause this is Ministry Without Hating It. And I know what that feeling is like. You said things were going good, or like, you know, all those situations that you just listed that God prunes. And it's one thing for us to go. I mean, I even preached on that recently. Like, you know, the Lord prunes back to greater fruitfulness, you know, but like to believe it and actually practically walk that out as a ministry leader, what do you do or what do you even maybe coach and mentor others to do in those scenarios? So that this can be something that I can actually allow God to, you know, let happen.
Yeah. Well, you know, you can read books, which is good. But I would say that I think it's Ephesians 6:10 to be strong in the Lord and the power of his might. To me, that is saying that what do you do when you go through disappointment like this? Where do you go to? You can go to a book, but it has to start from the inside. The strength has to come from with you. I mean, when that Heartland District, I was really disappointed. I shed tears. I shed tears of sadness, disappointment. I was mad. I was angry. I was like frustrated. So it was the wrong kind of tears, but it was also the tears that attracted God, because in those tears, I made it a prayer. So the way you move through those, you have to talk to God more about that disappointment than you do anybody else. I mentioned it one time to my husband, how disappointed I was, and that was it. He never heard another word until Antonio came to me and asked me to be part of that regional pastoral team, because I just stayed with God. I just went to God. I stayed with God. And, you know, and then after I got to a place where I felt, you know, a little bit stronger, then I started reading books. I would get books on how do you handle disappointment? Cause I was really disappointed.
Yeah.
But how do you go through it? Really? It has to be you have to have a personal victory. If you don't have a personal victory, I don't think that you'll have something that will last. I don't think you will. I think that if I didn't have a personal victory, I would have been satisfied with somebody calling me and saying, Espy, can you come and speak at my church? And I would have done it just because I always want to build people and build wherever. But that would have been my 5 minutes of fame.
No. I think I need a moment. I'm sorry. It's hitting me in a space of, because I've actually even had, I'll just use myself as an example, and I'm sure maybe other ministers can relate, that in those moments of disappointment, my go-to sometimes is to complain. And you even used your husband, and I allow, you know, I recognize that there are safe spaces, but for you, that's even some of the temptation to avoid of let this be outwardly, whereas you were saying, no, I need to go inward with Jesus and allow him to minister to that space.
And you know what, like Pastor Chad, when you show up, what people see is what they get. You know, so like you can do this off the chart 3-point sermon, man, the Spirit of God falls, you know, but nobody saw what it took for you to get that message. Nobody saw the prayer that you put in. Nobody saw that, you know what, but what they did glean from your time of prayer and studying, what they did glean is what came out of you for those 30, 35 minutes. And then that's it. It's over, you know? And I really feel that God wants to raise up a people who are willing to invest in that private time.
Yeah.
You know, because it's like right now, what if Foursquare calls Chad, calls Brenton, says, hey guys, I heard about your podcast and we want to give you 10 minutes on Connection Platform at 2023 Connection. So really what's going to happen is the world is going to hear 10 minutes of where you've been, but really what it is, it's going to be 10 minutes of your blood, your sweat, your tears, your sacrifice, your still showing up when you didn't feel like showing up, wondering how this is going to go. The podcast that you've done that probably didn't go the way you want. They're going to gather all that and we're going to hear it for 10 minutes. You know, and to me, I just feel that the way you make those 10 minutes and where you shake the world is when you allow God to shake your private time in prayer, you allow God to shake your private time in study, you allow God to shake your private time when you want to say no and God wants you to say yes, those private times where you want to say yes and God is saying no. I mean, all that, it's like, you know, I'm like, I count it an honor when anybody asks me to share at any time, because it's my opportunity to platform what Jesus has done in my life. And if I ever get to a place where it's all SP personality, shut me down. Turn that.
Yeah.
Just pull the plug, shut it down. I don't want it. I don't want it. I'm not, I don't want it. I don't want anything to do with it. I want people to get so hungry for God, to groom, get so closer to God just because of what the two sentences I said, you know, I feel that that's what the world needs right now.
That is so well said and articulated. I just want to say thank you for sharing that. It speaks right to me.
Well, amen.
Brenton, I've asked a lot. Do you want to ask one else?
Just going to say, like, Chad's like, hey, is this in the line? Are they going to ask him to present for 10 minutes?
Hey, you know what? You never know. Another motto is stay ready. You don't have to get ready. Just stay ready.
That's good.
It's amazing what happens when you're just obedient to what God's calling you to do, the opportunities that do and don't come up because of your obedience, or even the opportunities you lose. I was just listening to a guy today talking about he lost television time for major networks because of his convictions, and the Lord said, nope, don't sign that contract, and it blackballed him. So, just your obedience can move you to places, but it opens other doors. So.
Yeah.
I wonder if we could go back to, because you've talked really well about, you know, you said, if you want to shake, I love what you said there. If you want to shake the world, you got to let God shake your private time with him first. Mm-hmm. If you can maybe connect that to what you had mentioned earlier, because I also think that's important. So as we talk about obedience, but then also even in the pruning and the seasons that we don't like, when it comes to the phrase that you said, know your lane, because I feel like that's something that there's maybe more to that behind what you're saying with that.
Well, our church, Cornerstone Christian Center, is probably it's the only church I've known. We are a house of leaders. So we I don't know why, but our house attracts leaders. Like, we'll have leaders that lead at really mega strong churches, and they'll leave that church and come to our house. So we're like, what do you do with this strong leader? We really help the leaders understand their lane. Because when you have a group of leaders in one room, it's very intimidating. Like, I sat on the board for like a second, probably for that year and a half. And I didn't realize how dumb I was until I got in that board. I can really be honest with you. I talk about intimidation, and I was like, God, I do not belong in this room. You have got the wrong person. So I had to really, really process that. And God had to really kindly and gently move me to the fact that your lane is centered around what God has placed on the inside of you. So I felt my role on the board was not like, I was not a financial planner. I was not a real estate guru. But I felt my strength was I brought a prophetic piece. I brought a piece that gave space for the voice of God, what God was saying, what was he thinking. And I had to really be okay with that. When you say lane, I'm just using the board as an example. When you say lane, it has everything to do with your identity. Who are you called to be? What are you called to be? What are you called to say? What are you called not to say? So it's the whole identity piece. You know, like if you look at a church, like if we have bigger churches around our community, but if we looked at those bigger churches and said like, man, we're such failures. You know, they're like, they're doing three services and we're like begging people to come to one service, you know, right now after COVID, you know, but we have to know that we are in the right community, saying the right things, building the right people the right way. I mean, that's really what it is to look at being in our lane, is really knowing that you know who you're called to be and who you're called to. Because God calls people, but he always calls us to a geographic. You know, so if corporately knowing your lane is what does your geographical area need to know? Because when you start announcing that, you start attracting those people, because it's spiritual. I don't mean to be deep, but it's spiritual. We believe, this is what we teach at Cornerstone, that the words we speak over the pulpit, the worship that is released, it goes into the spirit realm. It goes into our communities, and it just releases those types of announcements. And we believe that it attracts those types of people to our house. And, you know, I don't know if that's too weird or deep, but we really do believe that, you know. So knowing our lane is knowing who we're called to be. And I don't know. Does this make sense? Am I just jumbling?
No, this makes perfect sense. And it's, you know, it's something that I continue to also hear from others as well. Is that when it comes to even my ministry context, and even I'll just be honest, even enjoying it, right? If I'm trying to fit a mold or an expectation or a model or whatever that is not true to my identity or to even, like you said, geographically the context that I'm in, I am going to hate what I'm doing. And maybe that turns into self-hatred, hatred towards my creator. I mean, yeah. I get all of that. So I 100% understand what you're saying.
Yeah. The lane is big. Knowing your lane is big. You know, I'm going to revert it back to the house. If I, as a wife, can really understand my lane as a wife, you know, then I'll understand how to be a mom, grandma, you know, all the family hats, you know. Then when I go to my local church, they get the overflow of me really understanding my lane. You know, I'm married. I'm not looking to be no husband. I have a husband. I don't need to be the man of the house either. You know, I can easily submit myself, you know, to my husband's, you know, leadership, you know, and out of respect for that, I can easily submit to my role as a mom, to my son and daughter, grandma, you know. So I just feel that if we can just get the simple things at home, it can explode in the local church.
In ministry, it seems like, you know, I've heard that saying, stay in your lane, so many different times, different ways. You have expectations from other people, though, that often try and pull you out. And then you have your own expectations of yourself that also pull you into other directions. How do you navigate some of those to determine this is what, and how do you say no to the things that are would pull you out?
Well, I would say one of the biggest things with that is don't be afraid if people don't like you. Mm-hmm. Like that people pleaser thing, because there will be people who will try to put you in a lane. And I'm like, you know what? I don't really feel I'm supposed to be doing that. I don't, you know. So that's going to be like, are they going to be upset with me? Are they not going to like me? Oh, and I'm just going to go ahead and say yes. So I don't have to deal with all those emotions. You know, so that's one side of it. What was the other side of your question?
Just really, how do you, when you have your own expectations of yourself that maybe even pull you outside of the lane that God's called you in, but, it, you know, in the scope of who you are, you're like, oh, I could do that. I could do this. I can do everything.
Yeah.
I'm a power leader.
Then the personal side of that is not trying to be somebody that God's not called me to be.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'm sure you guys are guys. So I'm sure, like, who are these like Christian leaders? You look like, man, I would love to be like Craig Groeschel. You know, I would love to be like, you know, John Bevere, man, he's just so on it. You know, if I could have just a little bit of T.D. Jakes, a God in my, you know, my hoop and howl, you know, whatever. You know, we all feel that way, you know. It's not trying to be somebody else. It's trying to be me,
yeah.
You know, and being okay with that, you know. I feel like I would say I'm a pretty funny person. So I try to use my humor in when I teach and when I lead, because I just feel that's part of me. I'm not trying to be anybody else. That's just me. For me not to be that way, you know, I think that it would be kind of boring to not be true to myself, you know. But the flip side of that, what you're saying, Brendan, is to not be who I'm not, you know,
yep.
Be authentic to me, be true to me. As the youth say, I'm going to be for real, for real.
Real for real.
Yeah. I use that phrase all the time. So I know exactly what you mean. Yeah. See, I can be funny too, SB.
Yes, Chad, you do have, you have a dry sense of humor.
I know I do. Thank you. Thank you. I love that. And I think that is what draws people to you and even other leaders, is that they do see, you know, you, you're your authentic you, and you're not going to be anybody else. And I'm speaking specifically to you, SB, but also maybe as an encouragement to others.
Yes.
Of what act are you trying to, like you said, who are you trying to emulate that is not you?
Yeah.
That's really, really good. Yeah. That's really good.
Yeah.
I'm curious, when you think of the ministry leaders that you get to serve now, and just kind of looking out, that can mean your local context, or maybe even now that your platform, as you mentioned, has been expanded to more of a district and even regional. What are some of the things that burden your heart for them right now?
Oh, gosh. This after COVID, man, we've got so many disappointed leaders, senior leaders. They're hurt. They feel they're offended. They people who they felt were really by their side before COVID, they're not there anymore. So my burden for leaders right now is to help them see that God can do a new thing in the same place. Because it's like, maybe we should just shut our church down and go plant on the other side of town. But I really believe God can do a new thing in the same place. I really believe it.
Oh, okay. So you've hit a trigger, and I'm going to say it's a good trigger, because my wife, Lindsay, you know, she was ordained, Foursquare ordained, back in October. And that was actually one of the words that was given to her by our supervisor's wife, Nina. And she said that she felt like God was saying he's going to do, what did you say, a new thing in the same place. So can you unpack that even more, maybe for those?
I'm going to just give a little testimony.
Yeah.
We live in Illinois. Our dream for the last 3 years is to move to Indiana. We want to be Indiana Hoosiers. Yeah.
Go Indiana. There you go.
All right.
We want to be closer to Brenton. So we want to.
Yes, come on.
So
I want to be closer to Brenton too.
Yeah.
So the Lord has geographically moved me.
Yeah. So we've been praying, saving for 3 years, Indiana. We do real estate. We own our own real estate. That's our business. We have a family business. And my husband was rehabbing a home 4 blocks from our house in Illinois. That was a ranch because we wanted to downsize. We wanted to get a ranch and just do all kinds of stuff. And my husband was renovating a home that had everything we wanted. And I was walking my dog and the Lord said, "What if you took that house?" I said, "No, I don't want that house. We want to move to Indiana." And the Lord said, this is what he said. He goes, "Could I not do a new thing in the same place?" And I said, "God, you can do whatever you want to do. You're God." And I didn't hear anything else. Came home, told my husband what God had said. And my husband was like, "Well, what do you think God meant?" And I go, "I think he's saying, do we want to buy this house? 4 blocks from where we live." So the more and that was it. We just kind of dialogued. I left it alone. I just began to pray about it. And long story short, the Lord invited us into a conversation and said, "You could take the house. You don't have to, but I'm giving you an opportunity." So what we did was we took all that money. We took that home. We renovated it from the front door to the back door, put everything brand new, everything we wanted, sold our home. Now we are mortgage free.
Oh, wow.
So the Lord said, "Can I do a new thing in the same place?" And the Lord was saying, it was a conversation. He goes, "I know it wasn't in another state. It's in the same place, but I can do a new thing if you let me." I didn't know the new thing was to be mortgage free. We're too young to be mortgage free. Aren't you mortgage free when like you're 80 or 70 or something?
we don't think that way. Right. It's not something that's taught in our society.
Right. Yeah. So he was saying, "I didn't know God's new thing was to make a step free."
Hmm. Yeah. Wow.
So God can do a new thing for a pastor in the same church. What does that look like? In my context, it was mortgage free. In a pastoral context, it could be where God is going to send brand new people who own businesses and they're extravagant givers. I don't know.
Right.
It could be someone who developed a whole curriculum for a whole school district, sends them to your church, and now is going to help you put a whole new Sunday school curriculum. I don't know, but I do know it's God's new thing, and it's going to look different to each leader.
Those pastors and leaders that you're talking about, you have a burden for. Would you say this is the word, maybe, that you feel the Lord has given to you for them?
This is the word I've been sharing since last October.
Okay.
And what I do is I start with this word, but somehow, somewhere, God always shifts it and it makes it tailor-made for that house.
That's good. Mm-hmm. That's good. So, I will maybe just to draw back to what you said earlier, you get that word and then that tailor-made in the private space, in the quiet time. And so perhaps, leader friends, right, instead of complaining about what isn't anymore or what should be and all that, maybe it is taking the step back to the private space to allow God to shake you inwardly, yeah. right? To prune us back, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's so good, SB. Thank you.
You're so welcome. You're so welcome. And again, we didn't see that coming. And so now we live four blocks away. But I'm going to tell you, this is the most peace. I have a lot of peace.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. And you can also visit Indiana anytime you want to. It's literally right next to you.
And my sister lives in Indiana, so I can just go sit in her living room and feel like a Hoosier.
Perfect. There Perfect. You go. Yes. Yeah. All right. So I just want to, being aware of your time, we've got one more question that we'll get out with this. And you have answered some of this already, but I'm curious, when I ask the question, how have you learned to do ministry without hating it? What would be your response?
You know, what I do, I did, like what I'm doing now, I did before the Heartland District even identified me. Dan Munt saw some of the stuff I was doing on social media. So when the other DMR stepped down, he said, "Hey, I see what you're doing. This might be a good fit." Before I was doing this at my local church context for free. But I did it because God called me and because I love God. So the way I'm going to continue to do this with or without a position is because I love God and I just want to do what God has called me to do. So it's the love, hate, you know, I would word it high points and low points. I would word it happy places and extremely points of disappointment, you know. But I would just say it all stems to just really being connected to God. You know, I was a happy single and I'm a happy wife. In other words, I had God when I was single and I have God when I'm still married. And so it's just really just loving God.
That's great. Well, and it draws back to what you said, you've said from the very beginning, it's in that quiet space. It's in the knowing him and his voice.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It is really, God is real. And I just graduated. I did my MDiv from Indiana Wesleyan Seminary, 3-year program. We lost 6 family members. I mean, mother-in-law, brother, sister. I mean, it was just, and I've come out of that with this one statement. I'm so glad heaven is real.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
And that's it. And God is real. You know, if God is not real, then I'm the biggest fool, and I'm okay to invest in that.
That's great. Well, SB, I just want to say, I just had this thought, you know, it does give me confidence to know that our movement has leaders like you in the spaces that they're at, listening to God in the small spaces and then taking that to invest in us, the field. I just want to say thank you. Thank you for your heart. Thank you for being just being vulnerable and real with us in these spaces. I know that's going to translate and really minister to a lot of leaders that are listening to this. Well, thanks again for joining us for this episode of Ministry Without Hating It. We hope that it's helped you take one step further towards loving what you do more through the wisdom of others. We want to again thank today's guest, SB Morfis. Man, just some really great practical stuff, but also just from a place of vulnerability and authenticity. I hope that you were able to take something from this and begin to implement that within your own ministry and life journey. If you'd like to connect further with SB, we've made ways to do so available in this episode's show notes. And if you'd like to connect with us further, support the podcast, or even sign up for show updates, just go to ministrywithouthatingit.com, or you can visit our Linktree at linktree.com/withouthatingit, all one word, to get started. And don't forget to subscribe to Ministry Without Hating It wherever it is that you get your podcasts so you don't miss out on our future episode releases. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time.